Hue and Cry by Kate Orman and Q. Thursday morning. Bernice woke up with a hangover and a ukulele. She frowned. Granted, it wasn't the strangest bedfellow she'd ever wound up with, but it was certainly the pinkest. She stared at the bright fuchsia apparition, struggling to recall its provenance. All that surfaced was a vague memory of the night before. Playing her drunken digmate some old earth ballad. Anarchy in the UK, she thought. It had gone down quite well. She rolled over. A 4-foot-tall lizard stared back from the end of her bedroll. Gah! Miss Berenice! Oh, chilly, she yelped. Oh, you scared my hair off. Kyoshans weren't lizards, of course, though they bore a strong resemblance to geckos. Rounded rather than angular, with fat fingertips and a bulging eye on either side of their heads. Jilly's snout was turned to one side so that she could focus her left eye on Bernice, its slit pupil enlarged to a black dot in the tense, dim light. As she watched, Jilly stuck out her disturbingly human-looking tongue and licked her own eyeball. Bernice's stomach lurched. Oh, just give me a minute, she said faintly. Jilly was the last person she wanted to see right now. Talking to the little Kyoshan took a lot of brain power, and right now thinking hurt. But more importantly, Jilly's outdated vox box had a tendency towards feedback, and shrill noises were not on Bernice's agenda this morning. Bernice got up and wobbled to the overburdened folding table that served as her workspace. Somewhere under the detritus lurked the little yellow packets they'd been given at the start of the dig. She'd pored through printouts, data eggs, the cheap and nasty electronic diary they'd all been given, a bulky chunk of blue-green plastic with metal trim. Aha! Double yellow sachets of salvation. Technically, rehydration powder was for emergencies only, but in a pinch, it worked a treat as a hangover cure. She ripped a packet open, dumping its entire contents in her mouth with a chaser of lukewarm canteen water. Better. She poured more water in, swishing the mixture around to try to wash out whatever foul thing had crawled in her mouth and died while she slept. She wished she could dump the whole canteen over her head. The spectacular desert rainstorms they'd been warned about were a no-show so far. They weren't rationing drinking water yet, but it was starting to get a little too far between baths for Bernice's liking. Still, she grinned. This was Bernice Summerfield in her natural habitat, hungover, under canvas, part of a little team digging the truth out of some alien soil. It was almost like being home.
Has been a minute.
Bernice blinked. What?
Has been a minute. You asked for one.
Ah. This was the extra brain power thing. The translator on Jilly's throat wasn't great with idioms in any, tongue. So you really had to think before you spoke to her, because she was apt to take everything literally. Bernice rubbed her eyes and tried to focus. Right, what did you need, Jilly?
Knock, knock!
Callie appeared and stuck her head round the open tent flap. I'm just Miss Popularity this morning, Bernice thought.
Anyone home?
No, come back when the tent stops spinning.
Callie chuckled.
Serves you right for partying all night. Some of us had an early errand to run.
She stepped inside, ducking down under the tent flap. Callie was a very tall, freckly soul with white blonde hair and a sardonically sunny disposition, probably due to the fact that she generally stood so much closer to the sun than everyone else.
Anyway, I come bearing gifts.
She rattled her knapsack. Bernice jerked her head up.
You didn't.
I did.
Callie lifted a corner of her bag to reveal a glint of copper wire underneath.
Oh, you absolute hero.
Yep, pretty much.
Bernice scrambled for her own dig bag, transferring the coil from Callie's.
How did you get it past the renter guards?
Told them it was tampons, she deadpanned. Weirdly, they all lost interest in my bag after that.
Bernice chuckled. There was an odd noise from the cot behind her, but she ignored it for the moment.
Seriously, thank you. You have no clue what a difference this could make. Oh, I have some idea. Callie smiled, miming a sign over a museum exhibit. "The McAllister Mannequins has a nice ring to it, don't you think?" Right on cue, an atonal twang rang out from the bed behind them. Jilly had found the ukulele. She sat on the edge of the coverlet, calmly detuning the instrument and plucking an odd series of unpleasant notes on its strings. Bernice rankled. She'd never been to the Chios Archipelago, Jilly's homeworld, but she suspected that touching other people's things without asking wasn't good manners there either. "Jilly, I'm sorry we interrupted you," Bernice said with measured politeness. "What did you want to ask me?" Jilly pointed her snout up at them, one eye fixed on Bernice, the other moving slowly over Callie as though trying to guess her dress size. Finally, Jilly fixed both eyes on them and said, with an ear-piercing shriek of feedback,
"No, nothing. Time for breakfast. That's all."
And went right back to detuning the uke. Callie raised an eyebrow. "All right, then," she said. "See you in the salt mine, Summerfield." "Thanks again," Bernice called at her departing back, rummaging for a pair of sunshades through the geologic layers of stuff on her work table. She hadn't really needed them so far, what with the site being mainly underground, but meals were always open air, and until the dehydration powder kicked in, she didn't like her chances of killing the headache with no sunshades. Feedback splintered her thoughts.
"Miss Bernice! Oh, Jilly, could you not?"
It was sharper than she intended. She could tell this mainly by the state of Jilly's hairdo. Kyoshans had soft tufted crests around their gills and up their heads, like an old earth mohawk. The punk rocker in Bernice secretly approved. Startled Kyoshans looked like affronted cockatoos, their top crest jutting up like an exclamation mark, which was probably why they never wore hats. Except for Jilly. For some reason, she was quite attached to her team-issued slouch hat, even though, like her oversized QYU T-shirt, it looked ridiculous on her, and even though, like now, her crest tended to bump it down towards her nose when she was nervous. Her gill tufts were at half-mast, too, trembling slightly as she breathed. Another anxiety signal. Bernice felt a pang of remorse. It wasn't Jilly's fault her uni was too cheap to buy her a decent Vox box. Bernice squinted and rubbed her eyes, trying to think of a peace offering or a friendly gesture, and her gaze fell on the ukulele across Jilly's lap. "Why don't you go ahead and keep that?" she offered. It was a cheap thing, anyway, probably left behind by the survey team, and the little Kyoshan did seem very taken with it. Jilly gave the uke an uncertain glance. Her gill tufts relaxed, settling down behind her ear slits. But she didn't reply. "No, don't mind if I do," or "cheers, that's very kind," or even a basic "thank you." Just a probing stare from those uneven eyes blinking and swivelling in their sockets. The silence stretched past awkward and into uncomfortable. Finally, Bernice said, "Okay, right then, see you later," and left her tent, with the Kyoshan still inside. So much for friendly gestures. The trip to the mess hall was mercifully brief. The archaeologists' camp was an island of 6 small tents, bordered by army barracks, each long military shelter sporting a pole with a square purple lantern, the flag of the new Xarvan kingdom. Bernice didn't much care for the military presence, but the shared mess hall did have slightly better fare than your average dig site. That was the upside. The downside was morale. Last night's party was a rare light moment in an otherwise tense dig. The constant sight of trained soldiers and static rifles put everyone on edge. Sometimes excavations did need an armed guard to chase off looters, but this was something wholly different. Bernice's team had landed themselves smack in the middle of a tense political row. Nutshell. The Pieri Koni were indigenous Xarvans conquered by the Aeniri, the current ruling class, and for various reasons, neither side wanted the dig to happen. Aeniri folklore held that the gods had brought their ancestors here in a heavenly sky pyramid, and the discovery of the real pyramid, with Pieri Koni dead inside no less, would upset centuries of religious doctrine, not to mention fierce land entitlement claims. The Pieri Coni, meanwhile, objected to the dig on the grounds of grave desecration. So, one side was fighting for ancestral dignity, the last possession of a conquered people, and the other for the one thing that every species always fought the bloodiest battles, a fragile ideology. And Bernice and her team sat right on the match that could light the entire powder keg. Small wonder, then, that the mood in camp was sombre. It wasn't just the armed guards today, though. Bernice was gratified to see several pairs of sunshades in the pancake queue. Hers wasn't the only hangover at the table this morning.
Summerfield!
Ackerman! Bernice took the seat across from him. The closest she'd gotten to the usual clubhouse camaraderie on this dig was a half-hearted secret agent's joke with the Big Islander. Bernice popped a limp rasher down her gullet. Status report?
Ah, you know, just another day slaving away for our little lizard overlords.
Jilly's presence in camp was another sore point. The University of Chios Yartha was footing the bill for this project, and the blue and green QYU logo was everywhere. On the tents, the slouch hats, the enamel mugs and plates in the mess hall. So when they put one of their undergrads on the team, not an archaeology student, but an art major, who was going to argue? Not to mention the perfect willingness of their staff to assign Bernice official academic credentials for a very reasonable fee. Still, though, it chafed. The Chaotians' reputation as scavengers, smugglers and art thieves preceded them. Using their main uni as a front gave things a nice academic sheen, but everyone knew they'd try to walk away with a whole dig site the minute someone's back was turned. The new Zarvan Kingdom had only agreed to work with them so that neutral foreigners would take the heat for whatever political firestorm the dig uncovered. Also, funding. Ackerman poured half a carafe's worth of syrup on his pancakes.
Speaking of which, how's our patron's resident mole? She was looking for you earlier.
She found me, said Bernice. I think her vox box is getting better. I only thought my head would explode twice during our conversation.
Oh, no doubt, Callie chuckled over her scrambled eggs. Seriously, is there no volume control on that thing? It's like talking to a megaphone.
What colour was she this time?
This from Boyd, the soil specialist. Wherever Jilly got off to each day, she always came back wearing an interesting palette of topsoil. No one had seen dirt like it on the entire site. Some days the little Chaotian was so vibrant she looked like she'd rolled in the chalk dust from a preschooler's drawing. Belatedly, though, Bernice realised that Boyd didn't mean the soil.
I think she's taken quite a shine to you, Summerfield. Probably getting all nesty.
Ah. The mottled patterns along the Chaotian's dull brown flanks changed colour when they were in season. Boyd was making a sex joke, because interspecies romances was unnatural and hilarious, apparently. Also, Chaotians were a parthenogenic race, all female. Just in case Bernice wasn't getting his kinky lesbian lizards vibe, Boyd winked and stuck his tongue out suggestively. Bernice checked her own tongue. The mood around here was already tense. No need to stir it further.
No, I don't think I'm ready to settle down with a wife and eggs just yet.
Everyone laughed.
Through a mouthful of pancakes, Ackerman said, It's not her tongue I mind so much, it's her tail. If I trip over that thing one more time, I'm giving her a free cordectomy.
It had become a daily ritual, Jilly bashing at the table. What was up with her vox box? Did she really need to wrap her tail around everything? And for sweet crux's sake, could she ever go 2 seconds without licking her own eyeballs? Sometimes Bernice joined in the griping. The Chaotian got right up her nose most days, to be honest, but the bigger part of her felt ashamed for trashing someone who was never there to defend herself. Jilly hadn't taken her meals with the team since the first week or so. This was due partly to her menu. Plate-sized beetles on the half-shell put the humans off their lunch, and partly her manners. At least they'd finally convinced her to ask someone to pass the salad bowl instead of zapping it across the table with her tongue. Working in a team, Bernice had missed. Group dynamics? Not so much. Social outcasts relieved tension and fostered group unity, and on a dig as fraught as this one, they needed all the unity they could get. But scapegoating was an ugly thing. And if Bernice showed too much sympathy, she could quickly find herself in Jilly's place. After all, she was the real outsider here.
Ah, peer pressure. Think you left it back in the old universe? Think again.
Announcements!
Announcements. The word echoed round the table, accompanied by a light banging of utensils. Once it had died down and Obaiyi was sure of everyone's attention, she proceeded with her list.
Right, first up. Ackerman got almost all the recovered statues into formation last night, so outstanding job there.
Applause and cheering. Ackerman gave the table a royal wave in acknowledgement of his magnificence.
Second, the Aeniri have a protesting permit today, so everyone be sure to wear your blasphemer's hat instead of your grave robber's hat.
Collective groans. The frequent demonstrations from both sides kept the soldiers busy and away from the main camp, but it was still off-putting. No one liked to be told they were damned to the void for all eternity just for walking to work.
And next up,
Obaiyi trailed off. It took Bernice a moment to realise everyone was looking at her. Jilly had appeared at her elbow.
Miss Bernice need this.
She held out Bernice's rain gear, which she had apparently taken from Bernice's tent. Feeling every eye on her, Bernice said,
Oh, are you sure I didn't hear any weather alerts this morning?
Yeah, Ackerman chipped in. Forecast says it's dry as a bone all week.
Jilly looked at him for a brief second, then turned right back to Bernice.
Need this!
More to get rid of her than anything, Bernice took the gear. Thank you, Jilly, that's very thoughtful. But the little Kyoshin had turned to leave before Bernice even finished her sentence. Obaiyi put the uncomfortable silence out of its misery.
Okay, then. As I was saying, the supply trucks will be a little late this week, so we'll have to stretch things out a bit in the toiletries department.
Bernice hardly heard the rest of the report. The rehydration powder hadn't quite killed her hangover, and after Jilly's latest awkwardness, she could feel the mocking laughter building at the table, ready to break the moment Obaiyi sat down. Bernice really didn't want to hear Boyd's suggestive comments about lesbian lizards forecasting wetness, or see the silent question on everyone's faces. Why was the little QYU spy doing her fetching and carrying? Pleading an upset stomach, Bernice excused herself from the table and went back to her tent to get her dig bag. Hiking up to the site, Bernice felt her mood lift along with the terrain. The wide, dry gully where the team had pitched camp, a dry arroyo flanked by scrubland, seemed to trap tension like other natural basins trapped air pollution. It was a relief to get away from it each morning. Also, an early start would give Bernice time to try the copper wires in private. The scheme she'd hatched with Callie wasn't quite illegal, but it wasn't strictly legit either. Best if she tested it out away from prying eyes. The only hiccup might be Jilly. No one knew where she went during the day, but Bernice had never once run into her on site, which was odd in itself. In theory, solo excavations were against the rules, but in practice, Jilly had recovered more artefacts on her own than the whole team put together. Her smaller size and lighter weight, not to mention the fractal gripping hairs on her hands and feet, meant she could access parts of the wreck that others couldn't. So no one said much of anything, even though they all wondered where she went, and what she found there that she might be holding back from the team. Cresting a rise, Bernice suddenly had a prime view of the entire compound, the tiny camp throttled by army tents, and beyond them, at a legally mandated distance, the sources of all the tension. The ramshackle Pier Ikoni camp covered the gulch's north bank, a ferociously proud and tenacious culture, but sadly low-tech. Their ancestors hadn't stood a chance against the high-tech invaders. Bernice spied several pier among the domed shelters, tall, gangling creatures like giant woodlice, their jointed carapaces painted with bright white lines that looked like bolts of lightning. The Aeniri's dune rovers graced the south bank, idling in the sort of neat, tidy rows that could only mean top-grade driving software. The two-story pastel coils always made Bernice think of what might happen if snails took steroids. Inside, descendants of Zava's conquerors lived in relative luxury, relative to the pier's grinding poverty at least. Finally, as Bernice neared the top of the hill, the cause of all the fuss came into view. The Sky Pyramid of Zava. 1,000 years ago, it had crashed into the planet, diving in nose first like an oversized lawn dart. A millennium of topsoil had covered it over, but radar showed its general shape was an octagonal prism, like a diamond in the sky. Excavated bits of hull revealed a bold magenta surface. The hull skin was crafted from a smooth, mystery material. Metal? Plastic? Bits of both? Whatever its makeup, it was photosensitive. Under the reign of Crown Prince, somebody or other, Bernice was terrible with historical names, the ancient Zarvans were bright, shiny, solar-powered overlords. Official doctrine had it that the Sky Pyramid had been hurled from the heavens by a traitorous station overseer, a Pericon Judas who'd brought the Aeneri Crown Prince, and eventually the Middle Kingdom, crashing down with it. Bernice trusted official doctrine about as far as she could throw the station, particularly when it gave such a convenient reason to keep the lower classes in their place. Scaffolding and ladders gave access to the top of the wreck. Bracing herself, Bernice climbed down through a series of midnight blue chambers, keeping one eye out for nosy Kyoshans and the other on her footing. The wreck had knocked the pyramid off its axis, leaving everything skewed at a strange incline, and the odd funhouse mirror slope had made it hard to keep your balance without the levelled platforms the team had put in place. Finally, Bernice ran out of ladders. An open hatch in the floor led down to her final destination, a huge open space they called the Hangar. It was by far the largest chamber they'd found, and it had dodged a bullet in terms of damage. Its east wall lay only a few rooms away from the Big Rip, a tear in the hull several metres long. Maddeningly, the rip wasn't quite big enough to admit archaeologists, just centuries of air moisture and microbes that had damaged the Sky City's innards. Bernie slipped into a waiting rope pulley and carefully lowered herself through the hatch. She loved this view. The light strings automatically brightened at her presence, picking out the rows of mysterious shapes below her as she descended. The ancient Zarvan stone army. The scourge of old Zava, called the Stone Demons and the Unkillable, in several less printable names, by neighbouring tribes. Hundreds of figures, slightly taller than Bernice, all standing at attention. Their outlines suggested a Zarvan in armour, a sort of bipedal stink bug, with an angular head jutting forwards from a sturdy-shouldered carapace. But their bodies looked supple, their limbs loose, as though they might leap forward into motion any second. Their blank, empty faces might have been masks. Bernice slid off the rope and stood before the lifeless grey legion. When they first opened the hangar, the statues were piled in a heap at the lower end, just a handful left undamaged by the crash. Luckily, though, they'd all been made in segments. Heads and torsos, feet and pincers, arms and legs, and tended to fracture along the join lines. This made reassembly much easier. The team had repaired as many as they could and built a reinforced platform on the hangar floor so the scourge of old Zava wouldn't topple over sideways again once they were upright. Bernice gave one of the statues a slightly nervous mock bow. Sorry about this. She draped a light string around its neck so the bulbs hung down its front like an old earth Mardi Gras bauble. Now she could see it much better. Its surface was a smooth concrete grey, marred only by a few chips and scuffs. Like the ship's hull, they weren't quite sure what the statues were made from. Best guess at the moment was a synthetic ceramic. A closer look revealed the ghost of some ancient paint still clinging to the porous surface, but time and oxidation had reduced it to a faint dusting. Bernice ran her fingers along the statue's primary forearm, tracing out the figure's greatest mystery. Long, thin grooves scored into its limbs, narrowing to fine channels on the feet and pincers. One day, she and Callie had debated what the grooves might mean. Decoration? Chemical aging like the cracks in old paintings? Crude nervous system map? Rudimentary circuit board? Oh! Both Pericone and Aeneri folktales, and by now Bernice had read or heard hundreds of those, spoke of these statues as a living army, a mobile force. But what if they weren't legends? What if these ancient lumps of rock once actually moved? It was a tantalising idea. Similar grooves lined the city's broken walls in distinctly grid-like patterns. Of course, actually jump-starting an ancient relic was far above the team's pay grade, let alone their permit. So naturally, she and Callie hadn't told anyone. But if they could get even a flicker of movement, an arm to lift, a pincer to flex, it would be a total game-changer. Centuries of history, art and culture rewritten overnight. Discovery rights would give the team some much-needed autonomy, and, most importantly, the funding would flow in like a dam-busting river. It was well worth the risk. Bernie snipped off a strand of copper wire, carefully feeding it into the tiny channel on the statue's forearm. Perfect fit. She and Callie were very thorough. When the wire reached the statue's main pincer, though, Bernice paused. Close up, that pincer was a real brute. Jagged ridges scored in its edge, like rows of angry teeth, could easily pierce armour and rip flesh. Bernice swallowed slightly, grateful that, for the moment at least, these statues didn't actually move. But she glanced up just to be sure. The stone demon's smooth grey poker face gave nothing away. Perhaps it was thinking that a poor morsel like Bernice was far beneath its concern, but then again, maybe it was thinking that she might make a nice appetizer. Something cold grabbed Bernice's arm. Oh! Bernice jerked backwards as something beige flew past her ear. The next moment, things became clear. A small, lizardy figure clung to the wall, eyeing Bernice warily. The startled hiss faded from her throat. The beige projectile lay revealed as a slouch hat, ejected by a catapulting Kyoshan crest. Jilly! Bernice gasped, sheepishly dropping her reflexive Aikido pose. We've got to stop meeting like this. What the hell are you doing here? Jilly's crest slowly flattened as she reached for her hat. I lied! Bernice blinked. I'm sorry?
In your tent! Breakfast. Did want to say something. I lied.
There was a pause. Okay, Jilly. I forgive you. Another pause. Do you want to tell me what you did want to say?
No.
Oh.
Show you.
To follow Jilly through the maze of tunnels, Bernice was obliged to climb debris, squeeze through gaps, and duck under ruined ceiling supports. She had never felt so big and awkward in her life. Watching the Kyoshan zip along the walls, racing ahead to shift the wreckage to ease Bernice's passage, was a lesson in humility. And perhaps a good reminder not to underestimate her teammate. Jilly's first job on the dig had been mapping about 140 rooms, leaving light strings behind for the big, clumsy humans. Bernice had to admit it would be easy for her to sneak things out on the sly. Finally, Bernice followed her through a makeshift doorway and into complete darkness. No lanterns, no light strings, blackness. She was just starting to think this might be a trap when a sudden light flared, causing her to yelp and shield her eyes. Whatever she'd expected to see when they adjusted, it wasn't this. She was in an art studio. Jilly stood under a field lamp, surrounded by benches, boxes, shelves, tubes, brushes, palettes and mixing bowls, plus a few stray items from a chemistry lab. Modern equipment blended with the ancient. Rows of fossilized pigments balanced on the rim of an electric paint mixer. Bits of stone demons littered the floor, a respectful distance away from one of the Sky City's rare corpses, roped off, but as yet unmoved. The work table sported a colourful array of powdery Kyoshan palm prints. With everything Dutched 10 degrees, it looked like a surrealist villain's lair. So, this is where you disappear to each morning. Yes, Bernice half expected Jilly to say, and now you know my secret, I must kill you. But she didn't. Instead, she licked her right eye and ducked down under a shelf. As Bernice watched, the little Kyoshan took a miniature crowbar from her dig bag and levered off a hidden panel. Inside was an aged chunk of plastic. It was pale blue, edged in greenish rust. A diary.
an electronic diary, a clearly, manifestly modern e-diary that seemed to have been here for millennia. Jilly stood aside as Bernice lifted the relic. What the frip? Centuries of dust aside, the diary was a ringer for a piece of junk back in Bernice's tent. Same rust pattern, same dent in the plastic by the power button, and the same stupid misspelling of Bernice's own name on the back. Property of Bare Knees Summerfield. Bernice nearly dropped it. What the frip? Ping! Her radio shrieked to life, making them both jump. Bernice swore loudly while Jilly retrieved her hat again.
Summerfield, what's your 20?
Obaye crackled.
Inside the city.
Bernice hoped her voice sounded steadier than she felt.
You? On our way. You stay put. No, if you're not in the hangar, go there now. We've got a situation.
Bernice hesitated. There'd be time to explore the diary later. The capital S in Obaye's situation was crystal clear. Reluctantly, she handed the relic back to Jilly. Panel replaced, they both made for the hangar. Bernice's head raced with so many hows and whys and what the hells about the diary that they'd nearly arrived before she thought to wonder why no one had pinged Jilly's radio too. They stepped in just as the others were clambering down the rope.
Some damned clerk gave the Peary Connie a demonstration permit,
Obaye growled. Today! Same damn time as the Aeneary. First we knew about it, some damn fool let off a warning shot to show the other side they meant business. She nodded at the ceiling. The new Zarvan army's up there running around like a bunch of damned headless turkeys.
Frip their heads! What about ours?
Boyd's voice was unusually shrill.
If they can't keep order up there, we're all crooked.
No worries, mate. At least down here we can't catch a stray bullet, said Ackerman, jumping the last few feet to the floor.
And where have you two been? Boyd demanded, rounding on Bernice.
With a start, she looked down at herself and realised that, after her stint in the art lab, she was almost as colourful as Jilly.
What's this?
Ackerman had found the copper wire. He pulled out a length just as Boyd noticed the guilty strand poking out of the statue's forearm.
Something you two want to tell us?
Obaye made the face. You never wanted to see the face. That curl of her upper lip could reduce you to a quark lepton soup. Bernice, now a puddle of her constituent particles, said nothing. Callie stepped right up and saved her bacon.
Well, it's obvious, isn't it?
It wasn't. The team stared at her blankly.
I mean, come on. Look at the groove patterns. Did you ever see a circuit board that didn't look like that?
Everyone re-examined the grooves, suddenly seeing them in a whole new light.
Callie threw an arm around Bernice's shoulders. And Summerfield and I thought, well, what kind of funding might there be just lying around for someone who gets these puppies up and running again?
Obaye looked like a chemistry teacher whose first years had somehow produced a mini atom bomb.
Do you two have any idea? I don't think a permit even exists to cover this, let alone for a bunch of off-worlders on a Presa Fund site. What if the government finds out? Or you damage the statues?
Or, Callie grinned, what if it actually works?
And what if your little science project gets us all killed, said Boyd.
Ackerman clapped a hand on his shoulder, light enough to seem friendly, but firm enough to convey annoyance, and gave it a brisk locker-room rub.
Oh, pipe down, Boyd, he smiled. You're just jealous you didn't think of it first.
Boyd backed off and unfolded a small camping stool by way of a sulk. Bernice felt a brief surge of gratitude towards Ackerman, until he opened his mouth again.
Sir, you never answered the question. Why are you and Jilly both covered in party powder?
Yeah,
said Boyd, deftly switching targets.
What have you and Dizzy Miss Lizard been up to this morning?
This time Boyd got the face. Boyd, Obaye said with dreadful politeness. Is the name-calling thing genetic with you, or just the result of a very poor upbringing? But Boyd's retort was cut off by a muffled popping sound from above. The team fell silent.
The new Zarvan soldiers were paid a pittance to guard them, they knew, and worse, some had family ties to the pier or the Aeniri. If the fighting got serious, there was a real chance that the guards would simply abandon their posts, leaving the meddling alien archaeologists to the mercy of whichever side won. Obaiyi switched her radio to headset.
New Zarvan Command, this is Termite Queen. What's going on up there? Over.
In spite of the tension, Callie and Bernice swapped a look.
Termite Queen?
And stifled a giggle. Obaiyi listened grimly for a minute that stretched to forever. Finally, she said,
All right, understood. Over and out.
And faced the team again.
Looks like someone's brought real weapons to the party. Our guards are trying for crowd control, but if things move past the stun gun stage, it'll happen quick. They say to sit tight for a few hours. I agree.
For a long moment, no one said anything. Then, with a purposeful stride, Callie marched over to the copper wire and gave it an inviting shake.
Well, looks like we'll be down here a while, she chirped.
Might as well get some work done.
The team looked at each other. What else were they going to do? And reluctantly got down to business. But no one's mind was really on the statues. Up on the hill, Obaiyi paced with her radio, listening to reports from outside. And down the dale, Ackerman tried to distract himself by translating symbols on the broken panels. And all around the town, Bernice and Callie had one arm of the statue fully wired. Raise the hue and cry, my lads, and bring the blackguard down. It was busy work, and it didn't change the fact that they were all still sitting ducks. Bernice's mind raced, trying to block out the sounds of impending battle by repeating a rhyme in her head, a chant from an old playground game that she hadn't thought of in years. It was a local version of hide-and-seek. One player, the outlaw, hid, while the others sought them. Once they were spotted, a thrilling chase ensued, and the captured outlaw was brought back to home base for punishment. The torture of 1,000 noogies, perhaps, or the dreaded death by Wedgie. As they led their quarry to justice, the seekers bellowed a victory refrain. Up the hill and down the dale and all around the town, raise the hue and cry, my lads, and bring the blackguard down. The rhyme was distracting, but it helped less than Bernice wanted. Somehow, she thought that when the battle's eventual victors came to seek the archaeologists, their punishment would be a little stronger than a wedgie. A second statue arm clicked into place. Callie gave it a satisfied pat and a whoop of encouragement. Jilly was hovering around, looking as though she wanted to say something, but backed off as Boyd stepped up with a handheld battery. He plucked the end of a wire from Bernice's hands and gave a terse chuckle.
Can you imagine if we get these things up and running? What they could do with those frippin' protesters? They'd come in here and they'll be pill-bug patty.
Bernice and Callie exchanged a look. Turning bits of rock into a fighting army in the space of a few hours was unlikely at best, but Boyd's voice had an edge of panic that could easily spread through the group if it wasn't checked. Callie shrugged lightly, gesturing for Boyd to thread her out some more wire.
Can't hurt to try. These dudes are scary enough standing still. Anyone sees them moving, they'll be too worried about their underwear bill to pick a fight with a bunch of dirt nerds.
Bless you, Callie, Bernice thought. She was very good at this. Keep him busy. Keep him calm. They'd both pegged Boyd as the first one to crack if things kicked off, so he needed careful minding. Plus, Bernice had learned from long experience that reassuring someone else was a great way to curb her own fear. She was so focused on Boyd that she didn't spot the missing team member until she went to fetch her canteen.
Jilly! She called out.
The statues stared back impassively. Bernice tried her on the radio and got no reply. She bit her lip. This was a very bad time for the group to split up. But if she found the Kyoshin, she might learn more about the old diary hidden in her art lab. On the other hand, it would leave Callie all alone to babysit Boyd. Obaiyi and Ackerman were nose deep in their own work. Callie seemed to read her thoughts and gave a sigh.
I think we're good here. You go find her.
Yeah, Boyd muttered. Go get some hot reptile tongue action while the rest of us bust our backs.
Bernice and Callie traded weary, what an arsehole glances. Then Bernice mouthed a wide, thank you to Callie and set off on her mission. Jilly hadn't gone far. Bernice followed her powdery footprints to the big rip, where a wide gap in the hull gave an excellent view of the plain below. The little Kyoshan stood perilously close to the edge, her head tilted upwards and her tail wrapped around her own ankle. Bernice was about to pull her back, but something in Jilly's posture stopped her. Jilly's fingers were steepled and her eyes were closed, her gill tufts trembling in rhythm as she sniffed the air.
"We are water,"
she said softly. It sounded like a prayer. Bernice had read that Kyoshans worshipped water, but the reservoir was miles away. Then a breeze blew in, and Bernice smelt it too. Petrichor. A light mist had started to fall outside. The tiny droplets on the dry desert floor gave off a soothing metallic aroma that had always made Bernice think of home. Finally, Jilly opened her eyes.
"Told you! Rain coming!"
You were right. And for the sake of the camp, Bernice hoped it stayed light. If it turned into the long-threatened gully washer, their tents would be toast, very soggy toast. But human hope was a poor climate predictor, and Bernice thought she could already hear the droplets falling harder. Bernice cleared her throat. This was no time to talk about the weather. Jilly, where did you find my diary?
Where I showed you.
Yes, all right, but how did it get there? The Kyoshan gave her a searching look.
You tell me.
Bernice blinked. Well, Jilly had her there. It was Bernice's diary, therefore its presence in the wreck was most likely Bernice's doing. But how is that even possible? Finding no easy answers, Bernice finally took the last refuge of the thoroughly confused. She changed the subject. Jilly, you looked like you wanted to say something earlier, about wiring up the statues. Jilly suddenly found her own fingertips very interesting. You think it won't work? Slurp, the long pink tongue darted out and wetted Jilly's left eyeball. Jilly, this is important. If you know something, you need to tell us. The Kyoshan's tail unwound, seeking firmer moorings than her own foot, then returned to her ankle when it didn't find one.
Just a theory.
Go on. Bang! They both jumped back. One of the Tsarvin's soldiers had fired a gas canister into the crowd. Far from discouraging the protesters, however, it seemed to have given them new vigour. And a new target. Yikes! Bernice hissed.
Paint!
Jilly countered. The sudden burst of violence seemed to have loosened her tongue.
On statues, not the same as...
Jilly, Bernice winced. I can't hear you. You're too loud. Jilly held her vox box away from her throat.
Colours,
she said in a gentle whisper, slowly but much more clearly.
Not... Old Tsarvan, uniforms, all the same shade.
Jilly's real voice was a soft, croaky trill, like a cross between a frog and birdsong. Her plosives were glottal clicks and her consonants were iffy, but other than that, it really wasn't too hard to follow her. You know, you really ought to chuck that vox box, Bernice told her. Without it, you're a little hard to understand, but a lot easier to listen to. Jilly gladly slipped the thing off her neck and tossed it in her dig bag, then held up her powdery hand again.
Bright violet?
It took Bernice a minute to pass this. You mean... But that's just a myth. She had been told about bright violet, a living pigment, which was sometimes a young girl under enchantment and sometimes a witch in disguise, that could do everything from animating household objects to transporting heavy goods, but only as a local fairy tale. You're telling me that magic paint from a bedtime story can move a half-ton of rock? Jilly pointed.
Your wrist.
Bernice looked down and nearly slapped her own arm. Something was moving on her skin. It looked like an oil slick or a mobile birthmark. Bernice remembered Jilly grabbing her arm in the hangar with her powdery hand. But this stuff was much darker, a stunning, vibrant purple. A bright violet.
It is water,
Jilly said. And she was right. While they were standing there, the rain had picked up, sprinkling whichever body parts were nearest the rip, and the stuff, whatever it was, seemed drawn to the moisture. It's like the water brought it to life, Bernice breathed. Jilly nodded.
Doesn't last, though. Just a few seconds.
As they watched, the pigment's colour did begin to fade. Bernice moved her wrist to a beam of daylight coming in through the rip for a better view, and the pigment suddenly rallied. To her astonishment, it got bolder and took on an almost otherworldly translucence. Bernice looked at Jilly. Jilly closed her eyes and slapped both hands on top of her head. Jilly, are you all right?
Yes, said Jilly, but I am very stupid.
Why? Jilly pointed to the shimmering purple glob on her own oversized T-shirt.
Photoalgae. Plant-base. Needs water and
sunlight, Bernice realized. She thought of Jilly's secret lab with all her equipment. So quiet, so remote, and so dark. The water brings it to life and the sunlight keeps it going. Her eye was drawn to a tiny stream of rainwater descending the pyramid shell, maroon solar panel, all part of the same system, and down along a ruined hull plate. The little rivulet was very narrow, but managed to hold itself together all the way down, almost like a creek following a riverbed.
Oh, the force of the epiphany nearly made Bernie see stars. The statues! The grooves aren't wire conduits. They're canals!
She and Jilly both said it together.
They are water!
Outside, the shouting got abruptly louder. Bernice and Jilly turned to look through the rip.
Who is them?
The fighting had paused in light of a new development. Protesters on both sides quickly made way for the 100 or so people walking, no, marching, towards the hill. The new arrivals carried lanterns on poles, like the Aeneri, but these weren't Aeneri. The yellowish cloth of the lanterns was splattered with dried blood. Bernice felt her stomach sink.
I think, she whispered dryly, those are the Seer.
Bernice pinged her radio all the way back to the hangar. Obaye, it's the Seer. They're heading up from the east, probably been lying in wait this whole time.
Shit! Get back here now.
The Pier and the Aeneri were a fractious bunch, but at least they were all local. They lived in the same communities, and after the protests, they'd still have to walk down the street and look each other in the eye. The Seer were outright terrorists. In their quests for a pure Zava, they burned Pier conventricles and Aeneri cathedrals alike. The only thing they hated more than rival religions was non-Zavans. Bernice heard the team arguing a few metres before she reached the hangar.
We'll have to split up and hide. And then what?
Well, hope the armies stop them before they get in.
Frip! These statues could bust their frippin' heads! We need more wire!
Forget the wire,
Bernice puffed, bursting into the startled group. Jilly found the solution. Literally. The statues run on paint. Boyd loudly told them what they could do with their paint, but Jilly had already gone, zipping down the tunnels to her lab like a flash. Bernice felt another pang of envy for her easy mobility.
Honestly, it works. I don't know how, but when it gets wet, it starts moving.
The team barely had a moment to blink at the drying purple stain still twitching on Bernice's arm before Jilly was back, satchel clutched tight in her mouth. She dumped it and poured through the contents, grabbing tubes and brushes and mixing palettes. Callie finally broke the silence.
Well, we're not getting anywhere with the wires,
Obaye said.
The
Bernice had been knocked flat by enough explosions in her life to know at once what had happened. She sat up, moving carefully, inspecting herself for damage. She could still hear, just about, and everyone else was already getting up off the floor. Thankfully, there was no screaming. The hangar's east wall was buckled. A few stone statues had toppled and the air was full of dust, but the light strings were still working, bless 'em. She'd been through worse. Callie helped Obaye up. Bernice moved to the other side, trying not to look at the bloodied fabric on their leader's lower leg, but Obaye batted her away. She knew the score better than anyone. They had minutes now, not hours. "Fall back!" she shouted, her voice muffled in Bernice's ringing ears. "Everyone get to safety, now!" Boyd didn't need telling twice. Ackerman looked back uncertainly, waiting to see if Callie needed help with Obaye. Jilly was briskly mixing pigment like the blast hadn't even happened. "Boss?" Ackerman gave Obaye a pleading look. "Jilly? Summerfield? Everyone means you! Get your tails in gear!" Jilly didn't seem to have heard. Bernice was amazed at how calm she looked, but then felt a pressure on her boot and saw Jilly's tail wrapped around her ankle. In that moment, Bernice perfectly understood the little Kyoshan's nervous tick. If she had a tail right now, she'd glomp it onto something solid and comforting, too. "Go," she said to the others. "This is our best shot to hold them off. If it doesn't work, we'll follow."
"You're an idiot, Summerfield," said Obaye.
5 minutes, and then you take cover. That's an order." Bernice nodded, watching Callie and Ackerman help Obaye down the tunnel. Then she knelt beside Jilly. "All right, show me what to do. Let's get mixing." Self-doubt is not your friend in survival situations. Bernie Summerfield knew this from long experience, but sadly, knowing it did nothing to stop it. She could see the violet awakening, each smear swelling into a glossy blob that oozed across the statues' bodies. But surely the ancients hadn't applied it like this, just daubing it on at random and hoping for the best. Surely after 1,000 years it might be able to wobble around a bit, but it couldn't actually move huge lumps of stone. Surely without the ancient Zarvans to control it, the pigment would either do something totally random or nothing at all.
"We'll work,"
Jilly insisted. Bernice tried for confident optimism. "I guess I've seen stranger things." There was an unholy shriek of metal, followed by the hiss of a cutting torch. The Sieur had breached the hull and were now carving their way in through the hangar's damaged east wall. Bernice poured more water on the statues. The violet was starting to organise, forming patterns, flowing through the tiny canals and out into angular shapes. More screeching metal. Several loud thumps, and then the severed wall fell in and clattered to the makeshift floor. A violent gust of rain and wind followed the Sieur inside. Up close, they looked less like terrorists and more like rowdy teenagers, sunburned youths in homespun, their long setae tied back in peasant headbands. Bernice could see daylight behind them. Every wall in the way either blown up or cut down. One of the statues moved. The warriors' victory cries dried up as they clocked the stone demon edging towards them. Its blank face turned from side to side as if scenting the rain-soaked air. It took another step, and 5 other statues followed. The Sieur's front rank tried to retreat, but were blocked by the next wave of warriors pushing their way in. Those who had their wits about them started firing. They could hardly miss from the shrinking distance, but each bullet merely struck the statues with a small thud or ricocheted away. The statues didn't seem to notice. They kept coming. At the first hint of gunfire, Jilly zipped behind the remaining stone ranks and flattened herself against the wall. Bernice did likewise, which was just as well, as it meant that she didn't actually see what happened when the scourge of old Zava met the Sieur. But she heard it. Every sound. Heavy pincers smashed skulls. Hard arms broke limbs and backs. The Sieur screamed and tried to flee back through the wall, crushing and trampling each other in their panic. The statues followed them.
"They are water,"
Jilly hissed. Bernice saw what she meant. The stone army had scented the raging storm outside, and nothing was going to stop them getting to it. Not the Sieur,
not their gunfire, not boom.
For the second time that day, an ear-walloping explosion shook the hangar. Bernice suddenly found Jilly's tail wrapped round her head.
Ow! She loosened the scaly loops until Jilly got the hint and untailed her.
Through the smoke, they saw the damage. The sewer had collapsed the adjoining room, putting piles of rubble between themselves and the enemy, and completely burying everyone caught in the middle. That was enough for Bernice. The sewer were retreating.
Come on, she shouted. We should...
Jilly?
Oh!
The Kyoshin was across the floor and up the wall like a shot, heading for the battle.
What was she doing? She couldn't hope to clear all that smouldering wreckage or free the buried statues.
Then the wind shifted, and a gap in the smoke showed Bernice what Jilly had already seen. The Sieur weren't retreating. The dedicated ones, who'd kept their nerve and loosed a mortar round, were starting to regroup. Jilly climbed a lagging stone demon and poured the last of her canteen on its head. Then she was suddenly sprawling. Bernice couldn't tell if she'd tripped on her oversized T-shirt or if she'd fallen off chasing her hat again. If she hadn't tripped, she might have been able to dodge the shell a seer was aiming right at her statue. On the other hand, if she hadn't fallen, the blast might have hit her dead centre. As it was, it only took off one of her legs. Bernice tried to shout Jilly's name, but a lungful of toxic smoke turned it into a coughing fit. Without thinking, she ran blindly through the ranks of stone demons for the charred Kyoshin.
My hat!
Yelped Jilly.
Your leg! Said Bernice.
Jilly's statue kicked a path through the wreckage, tossing huge chunks of metal aside like paper planes. The other stone demons followed in its path. Already the storm was clearing the smoke, the wet gale washing the choked air clean. The statues headed for the daylight and pouring rain with the relentless purpose of a spawning salmon. Either they'd make it, or they wouldn't. Bernice's money was on wood. They were, after all, unkillable. Bernice snatched Jilly up and ran for it. When they reached the rope ladder, she yelled, "Jilly! Get up on my back!" But Jilly was already swinging up the metal rope, climbing as easily as if a chunk of shrapnel hadn't just ripped off one of her limbs.
"Wait!" said Bernice to the empty room. "I can carry you!"
She hauled herself up after Jilly and followed her from ladder to ladder till they'd both reached the city's entrance at the top of the hill. Now that the danger was behind them, Jilly's surge of adrenaline or whatever Kyoshin's had would wear off and shock would set in. Bernice had to tourniquet her wound and get her to a medic, stat. Then Bernice realised Jilly's leg wasn't bleeding. Was that normal? It looked like the wound had reflexively sealed itself. If only the city could do that, Bernice thought bitterly, perhaps a little in shock herself. Seal up the rip, repair the new punctures. The pyramid had reigned for a millennium. It had lain in the earth a millennium more. And the seer had decimated it in a 5-minute orgy of violence. Whatever knowledge and technology lay hidden in that little chunk of history was now irretrievably lost. Bernice felt like breaking a few skulls and spines herself. New screams roused her from her reverie. On the hillside, the unkillable stood in the furious rain, their violet tattoos pulsing. Below them, people were scattering. Lanterns and banners dropped on the wet scrubland. There was no distinction between peer or Aeniri, soldiers or seer. The lot of them were legging it in every possible direction. Jilly struggled to stand, gripping Bernice's arm for support.
I think they're finished.
Bernice frowned. Bleeding or not, an open leg wound was nothing to trifle with. With a nod from her teammate, Bernice wrapped Jilly's purple-stained shirt around her skinny body, binding the stump to her torso.
All right. Let's go.
Bernice crouched down. At last, Jilly climbed onto her back, and Bernice carried her away from the battle and down through the storm towards help, peering out between the coils of the soft, scaly tail wrapped around her face. Friday morning. Bernice woke up with a headache and a case of déjà vu. They'd found something better than a medic. The Aeneiri had summoned dozens of transports, bringing in private soldiers and entire miniature hospitals in their giant snail mobiles. The speed of their response bordered on the suspect, almost like they'd been expecting a big battle that day. As soon as they realized some of their patients were off-worlders, they'd set up a temporary specialist clinic in one of the spirals to house, and Bernice suspected to contain, their recovering visitors.
"Don't worry about your friends in the city," the new soldiers assured her. "We'll find them. We've secured the whole area."
"I'll bet you have," thought Bernice, as she lay in a soft, curved bunk in a softly curved room with a softly curved ceiling. The whole area, the whole pyramid and everything in it, including the statues. Good luck containing them, though. She sighed and fiddled with the bedsheet. Were there guards outside her door? Unless she was under arrest, they couldn't keep her here under medical caution. She had the usual bumps and bruises, a mild sore throat from the toxic smoke, plus a minor concussion from the blast. All par for the course. And her healers couldn't be that concerned about her noggin if they'd let her fall asleep. Probably. She lifted the bedsheet and swung her legs around.
"Oh, I see how it is. We all get blown up and you're in here sleeping on your butt."
"Callie," Bernice grinned. "Nice headband." A strip monitor graced half of Callie's forehead, matching Bernice's own. They were both under concussion watch. At least Bernice wasn't the only one who looked like a Burke.
"Oh, they're all the rage," Callie agreed.
"Be seeing them on all the best digs next year."
"I sincerely hope not," Bernice groaned.
"Oh, talking of which, though,
team's fine. Ubai's already bossing our healers around like a group of cadets.
Anjali?"
"I don't know. I think she's in a different section."
"You want to see her bodies, though? Just look out the window."
Bernice did. Tiny lizardy figures swarmed the valley below, arguing with Zarvan soldiers and filling blue and green QYU transports with items wrapped in safety paper. Artifacts. Valuable ones, going by the care with which they were handled. Jilly had never bought the team anything that warranted safety paper. Bernice slumped back on her bed.
"So, she was a spy after all. Looks that way."
Bernice's disappointment surprised her, but something about it didn't make sense. QYU were funding the dig. They were more than entitled to their cut of the takings. If they wanted more, sneaking items out would be easy so long as things stayed quiet. So why hire a spy to animate a stone army, cause a panic and bring the whole new Zarvan army down on their heads? Bernice rubbed her eyes.
"The statues?"
"Kaput. The army's doing a recovery, but most of the paint either washed off in the rain or dried out in the sun. Either way, it looks like they were a one-hit wonder."
Bernice offered Callie some of her bedside fruit plate, and their talk turned to pleasanter things, like the real food and hot showers waiting for them back at base, and the wayward gas canister that walloped Boyd and the ghoulies during the retreat, until a healer appeared to check in on Bernice.
"I'm checking out, but I'm fine. Trust me, if anything happens, you will definitely not be hearing from my home planet."
"One condition," the healer insisted.
Bernice noted its vox box was much newer than Jilly's, with a pleasant voice modulator and no hint of feedback.
"Take it easy. Don't wear out any of our patients, including yourself."
"Oh, don't worry," Bernice called sweetly as she strolled out of the softly curving door. "You'll get no arguments from me. I make it a point never to argue with my doctor."
She found Jilly in a visitor's lounge, sitting at an open window and watching, or rather smelling, the freshly watered desert outside.
"Hey, you're looking better," Jilly shrugged.
"Good drugs,"
Bernice smiled, and she passed on Callie's report.
"They've shut us down. Everything that's not already catalogued stays put until they sort out the legalities, which could take till the 10th of Never."
She thought sourly of the ancient electronic diary. All chance to explore it, and what it might mean now lost forever.
She thought, even more sourly, that she was now damned to carry the new electronic diary with her wherever she went, just in case she missed an opportunity to send it back in time and caused some kind of time paradox. Blast her scruples! "It also means they'll seize the goods you set aside for your uni bosses," she said. At least Jilly had the good grace not to deny it.
"Yes."
Bernice had heard somewhere that a young Kyoshan's rite of adulthood was an act of government sacrifice, rather like national service. But apparently the Kios service meant risking life and limb in planetary prison to traffic goods for your elders. "Here's what I don't get, though," Bernice went on. "Why the pigment? The relics will make them money, sure, but until yesterday every expert out there thought bright violet was just a fairy tale." Jilly was silent for a long time. Finally, she pointed out of the window at the QYU transports, full of artifacts.
"Assignment!"
Then she held up her oversized T-shirt, which Bernice was gobsmacked to see still held splotches of wet pigment.
"Extra credit!"
A slow smile crept up Bernice's face. They didn't know. Jilly made a guttural noise that Bernice guessed was a scoff.
"Fairy tales make no profits."
She looked down at the purple splotches with something like maternal pride.
"I suspected, I studied, but I can't experiment. So I spy."
Bernice was grudgingly impressed. Finding herself on the wrong end of a forced conscription system, Jilly had used it to fund her own private research. Not only had she played the dig team, she'd played her whole damn government and managed to smuggle out some active pigment into the bargain. "So if you get it back home, what then?" Bernice asked. "Sell it to the highest bidder?" Jilly hissed deep in her throat, making both Giltufts shudder. "Translation? Crack that." "Well, what then?" Jilly puffed out her chest.
"Thesis."
Bernice raised both eyebrows.
"So you went through all of this? For an art project?"
Jilly held her shirt up to the window again, as though this explained everything. Bernice squinted. The new Zarvan reservoir lay on the horizon, and suddenly, finally, Bernice saw it. Both the water and the violet shimmered in the early morning light, glistening prisms along their surface, hinting at deeper colours underneath. It was lovely and spellbinding and would absolutely dazzle the socks off anyone who saw it in a painting. We are water. Okay. Maybe it was worth the risk. "Well," she finally said to the young Kyoshan, who would soon be on the cover of every art, science and archaeology publication in the system, "best of luck. If I were your professor, you'd definitely get top marks." As Bernice rose to leave, a familiar fuchsia flash hit her in the retinas. The soldiers had brought the team whatever personal items could be salvaged from their tents, and daylight suddenly dawned on Bernice in a neon pink explosion. "Oh, for the love of... That was yours all along, wasn't it?" Jilly looked up.
"What?"
"The ukulele. Oh, I couldn't remember where it came from. Someone handed it to me and I just started playing." "But it belonged to you, didn't it?" Jilly took a deep breath.
"Left it on my cot. Wondered where it went."
Bernice cringed. "And I actually tried to give it to you. Oh, Jilly, I'm so sorry. Honestly, if I'd known, I would have asked first." The Kyoshan searched for a diplomatic word.
"You played it very loudly."
Bernice chuckled. That might be the most accurate review I've ever had. Standing now, she finally twigged why Jilly looked so small and vulnerable. It was the first time Bernice had seen her upright, without her hat. the hat she always wore, no matter how stupid it looked or how often it fell in her face. The hat that proved, however badly she fit in, that she was still part of the team. Bernice whipped off her own hat. Here, to make up for the ukulele. I won't be needing it soon anyway, if they're checking her IDs as closely as I think. Jilly straightened up as the hat touched her head. She gave no facial reaction, but the mottled patterns along her neck grew brighter, the Kyoshan equivalent of a blush. Bernice smiled. I'm sorry I couldn't grab yours, but, you know, bullets and statues in the way. Bernice bit her lip, thinking about what else they'd had to leave in the tunnel. And Jilly, I'm so sorry about your leg. The Kyoshan slumped a little.
Yes, me too, she sighed. That's gonna take months to grow back.